comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks. Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful blue ball we call Earth, thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very, very first time tonight. Welcome. I'm glad you're here, and I think you'll be glad as well. Now, some of you who watch every night are you're noticing that I'm not attired in the way that I normally show up for the show. As a matter of fact, you're wondering right now, why so formal? Well, it just came in. This, I don't know if I can get this off. Here we go. This is the brand new Kevin Smith Show cap. All right, let's get a close-up of that. Yeah, let's see. There we go. Yeah, you can see. Look at that. Boy, that's just cool, huh? Yeah, that's the new Kevin Smith Show cap. And just came in, and you need to get one. See, this is for all formal occasions. If you got anything you'd wear a tux to, you'd wear this cap. It's just the fashion statement of the year. And, you know, one of the things I really like about it, aside from the fact that it's got the Kevin Smith Show logo across the front, with the alien staring out from behind it. What's cool about it, you know, most so-called ball caps have back here a strip of plastic and some holes and pegs. And you have to size it by putting the pegs in the right holes, right? And it's always uncomfortable. And for people who have a lot of hair like I do, you know, it gets caught in that stuff sometimes. Well, this is Velcro. It's just, you can size it to any size you need, and it's just Velcro. And I thought that was pretty cool. So you want to be sure and get you one of those. That's in our store, online store. Go to kevinsmithshow.com and click where it says visit our online store. All right, enough of the ball cap. I really cannot do the show dressed in such formal attire. I've got to be a little bit more casual here. All right, now, you want to be sure that you get subscribed to the K-Files e-zine. If you are not already subscribed, you need to subscribe. It's our free weekly newsletter, and since it's free, I can't understand why absolutely everyone would not subscribe to it, but many of you have sat around for 2, 3, 4 years saying, "Yeah, I don't know if I really want to. I'm thinking about it. I don't know if I really want to do that." Man, I'd hate to be the guy that has to earn a living off of selling you a car or selling you a house or selling you groceries because, you know, 4 years of thinking about it, a guy could starve to death that way. And this is free. And then you can unsubscribe anytime you want to, but it gives you all of the inside information about the show, what's happening, what's coming up. It's all in the K-Files e-zine. Many, 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 many of the emails that we get are asking questions that have already been answered in the K-Files e-zine. Or if we get a lot of questions about something we haven't already answered, we answer them in the K-Files e-zine. So, we can answer it at one time and everybody gets the answer. It's just the best way to go. So go over there to my website, click where it says K-Files e-zine, and subscribe. We'll be back right after this. Thank you. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I stated my guest this evening, well, I didn't state, but it's all over the website. My guest this evening is Jerry Wills. We on this show, we explore ideas. We listen to information, and we ask questions, and we explore ideas. We're exploring ideas about the mysteries of the universe, the mysteries of ancient civilizations, ancient peoples, the mysteries of psychic phenomena, paranormal phenomena, UFOs, the mysteries of extraterrestrial life. We are in the mystery exploration business from the standpoint of hearing the information and exploring that information. Well, Jerry Wills is too. Jerry and his wife, Kathy, though, are a step beyond that, several steps beyond that, in that they are actual explorers. They actually go and investigate personally these mysterious places, most of them having to do with ancient civilizations or at least ancient times. And one of the mysteries that he has been exploring, he and Kathy, and we have been chronicling here on the show, is the mystery of a time portal that was alleged to be in southern Arizona. It took several trips to find this time portal in a very, very remote area of Arizona. And believe you me, when we say remote areas of Arizona, we have them. They are very real. We have lots of very remote areas in this state, and this time portal is in one of them. Well, he's just returned from their latest expedition, and they found it. Jerry, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you for having me back on.
Let me adjust your volume. We just barely heard you, but we did hear you. Okay.
How's that?
That's better. Jerry, you just went to this place. Again, you've been down there several times looking for this specific portal, this specific archway. And you found it this time. You didn't go alone. Who went with you on this expedition?
Well, as in previous expeditions, we had Mark Felder, Ray Stevenson, Michael Higgins, and of course Kathy. Wouldn't be complete without having Kathy there.
Someone has to do the thinking.
Well, that's true, and then she basically is responsible for us having a place to go to go. Look, she did all the research, you know, to determine where it was at.
All right, now Michael Higgins is the lead guitarist and lead male vocalist for Element 115, the band. What a lot of people might not know about him is he is also a computer programming genius.
Yeah, exactly right. And he's also one of the lead members of the Extreme Expeditions team, has been since the 90s, I think.
So, Mark Felder went?
Yeah, Mark Felder was there with us.
Okay, now Mark has been on the show. He was with you at the doorway of Aramuru in Peru. And I can never say it. You know, when you're not around, this is true. If you're not around, if I'm not saying it on the air, I can say it. But anyway, he's been on the show with us here with reference to going to the doorway and told us about his experience of going through this doorway. And then part of his experience, he told about seeing a crystal as he was inside of the doorway. He saw a crystal that was just the most amazing thing, giving off amazing light while he was in there. And then he has also been on the show with us here when you and Kathy and Mark, and who else was with us? Came to the studio.
Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff. Jeff Vance was here. Mm-hmm. And then there was someone else, though, on your trip to the doorway who also saw that crystal. And his name was Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And he went with you on this trip, right?
Yes, that's right. He was there with us.
All right. Now, you've told us a bit about the history of this doorway or this portal. And and we're talking about the one in South Arizona. You've told us a bit about its history and the legends that surround it. And even today, there are people that live not too many miles away that know about it and just don't want to talk about it. And then in your first trip down there, you got fairly close to it. And we're literally blown off of the mountain, so to speak, off of your campsite by a very strange, very high wind. And by very strange, I mean that it was, Felder said that he had been in hurricanes and that this was hurricane force wind. And it was apparently just blowing kind of in a straight line. Hit your camp, lasted for 7 or 8 hours, 10 hours, I think, and just absolutely destroyed the camp, and you had to leave.
Yes.
And then when you checked with the weather services, they had no record that any such wind had been blowing at their locations, but everyone in the expedition had the same story. And that, you know, the wind actually did happen.
Yeah, it was powerful.
Did you ever find out any more about this wind? Any other data or information about it?
No, not really. We checked with the Weather Service, with the Border Patrol, with the local residents. They all had, you know, a little bit of wind, but they didn't have anything like what we were experiencing. So there really wasn't any way to validate what happened. It was just a freak occurrence, I suppose.
You've been back, what, two times more before you found it?
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm interested in is, and kind of describe this for us, why is it so hard to find?
Well, very good question. This is a really, like you said, it's a remote part of Arizona. We're about, I think I measured 10 miles from the Mexican border. And the terrain is just unbelievable. It's very craggy, very rocky. And see, the thing is that even though you may know where the area is within a mile, covering that mile and looking is just incredibly difficult because you have very sharp and severe up and downs. You have very narrow washes that go in between these mountains. And, of course, in these washes where it can be green, you have an awful lot of brush and thorny bushes, cactus, and, trees. And, of course, you have wildlife in there as well. You may run upon a pack of javelina, which are pretty vicious, or you may run upon a skunk, or a coyote may be up there, or rattlesnakes. It's a wild region. There just isn't anybody back there at all except for the illegals coming across the border.
All right. Did you run into any of those?
No, we didn't. We didn't see any at all, but we saw quite a bit of evidence of their having had been there.
Yeah. Campsites and things like that, huh?
Yeah, piles of clothes, piles of cans. I mean, it's such a pristine area, and it's basically trashed out just like you would find if you went to Mexico. There's no consideration for cleanliness. It's just sort of wherever they end up, it gets trashed out.
All right, now, Jerry, on this last trip, you guys were doing the same thing as before, which was looking, climbing up sides of hills and I guess even sides of mountains and down the other side. How did you find it this time? What led you to it, or was it just an accident?
No, it wasn't an accident. What had happened is that 2 weeks ago, Kathy and I went back down there by ourselves and camped out overnight. It was a very peaceful night, except, of course, for the balls of light that were flying around the mountains. That was kind of strange. And then the next day we got up, had some breakfast, and we took off. We had an idea of where to go. We weren't absolutely sure. We ended up being out there for about 8 hours. We left at 9 in the morning. We got back about 5 o'clock, 5:30 in the afternoon. We had to climb two different mountains before we could finally see one of the features that would lead us to it. Once we saw that feature, then we made our way to this plateau, which is really very well hidden and nestled in between mountains. If you were walking as you normally would in this region, you're walking along a very large wash. And it's just trees here and there and huge stones and small stones, and it's really difficult to walk on. But it's a wide highway, let's say, that's going back into the mountains. You could walk right past this place and not even know that you'd passed it because it isn't obvious from being beneath it. So we decided we had to be above it. That's why we ended up climbing one mountain after another until we finally saw the features we were looking for. So at that point, we had the details, and we elected to wait until we had the team assembled before we would go back in there and make the final determination of where this portal would be found, which we did.
Okay, describe for us now, Jerry, where this portal is situated. Describe what it's like. What are the surroundings like right where it is?
All right. Well, what we've got is a wash that is probably 200 feet below it that tapers and comes to an end, really, because it's going up the crease between the plateau and the mountain. This is up on the side of the plateau. It is in between two different large stone outcroppings. One of the outcroppings is just, of course, where the plateau starts, and that's, I'm guessing that's about a 15-foot wall of rock. And it's probably no more than 20 foot from the portal to that wall of rock. On the other side of the portal, there is another outcropping of rock, so that if you were standing on the other side of that rock looking uphill, because it's quite a drop-off on the other side of that big, big outcropping of rock, you would never see the portal. So it's in between these two places, very well hidden, and just below the top of the plateau.
You know, it's for people who haven't been out here and have not been climbing this kind of terrain, it might be hard to imagine, but there are places left by ancient geological processes that look just like a wall that's been built. And, you know, there's one place right out of here at South Mountain, Jerry, that's like that. And when you climb that and look over beyond that wall, it looks like someone built it. But, I mean, you know, from a distance. Once you get up close, you can see it's a natural thing. But when you look over it, you're looking sort of into a bowl. And in this place, it is like a bowl with just sand in the bottom and a couple of trees. And you could probably, if you had a camp, you could probably sleep 25 or 30 people there, completely surrounded and protected from the outside world. Well, and I bet that the ancient native people who lived in the area used things like that from time to time. for protection. And what you're describing sounds like something similar to that. And I wonder if that's how this thing was first discovered.
Well, maybe so, but from what we've been told, it was first discovered just a few years ago, I'd say within the past 5 years, because previous to that, it didn't exist.
Well, I thought you told us about an ancient story or an old story about an Indian boy that went through this thing.
Well, that's true, but it's not this particular one. Here's the strangeness about this. The portal that's mentioned in the story, apparently that portal had crumbled and fallen. The fellow that gave us the information about this story, he told us that he lived out there for 2 years, and he knew this place like the back of his hand, as you probably would expect that a person would. He actually was at this plateau because he was collecting geodes, and he would take them into Tucson when the Gem and Mineral Show would occur there in late January, early February, and he'd have a whole truckload of them, and of course he would sell them, and that's one way he made money. He was a prospector and a treasure hunter as well, and this has got a lot of quartz outcroppings on it. There are a lot of stories about bandits having hidden their gold and gold coins and so forth back in these mountains. So he had been in this particular area and actually all over the place around this area for at least 2 years solid while he lived there. He knew where the old portal was because he'd seen it. When he took pictures, you could see it in the pictures, of course, and when he left, he still went back periodically to look for more geodes and such. Well, he discovered that the portal had collapsed. When he went back out and took pictures approximately 40 years later, which about 50 years later, which would be about 5-6 years ago, there in the picture, of course, the old portal wasn't there. But now, in its place and just off to the side, was a much larger portal that had never been there before. This archway was brand new. And though he'd been there for years, all over this particular plateau, he'd never seen this archway before. So he took pictures of it, and of course that's the pictures that we used with the features in the photographs in order to find it again. He can't understand how it could be that there was no archway there, and then suddenly there was. And it wasn't a case of mistaken identity or just having not ever noticed this, because he told us where he was digging for geodes, which is right near where this wash comes up, curves around, and that's where Kathy and I found a geode as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a case of being mistaken about where he was at. The features, the photographs, everything lines up, except this archway wasn't there 50 years ago.
And it doesn't look recently. It doesn't look like it was man-made?
No, not at all. It looks like it's just older than God.
Okay. We have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Jerry Wills. And Jerry, you said this archway looked older than God.
Yeah, well, you know, it looks pretty old. It looks as though it's just been there for hundreds of years. It's just amazing to me because Ron, the fellow that gave us all the details, his name is Ron Quinn. He's got pictures, and he knows his place like the back of his hand. Kathy and I have gone to his home. We've talked to him.
Now, have you seen the photographs that he took of the original arch?
Yeah.
And when you look at those photographs of the original archway, are the surroundings the same?
Well, it's not in the same place as the original archway. It's off to the side. It's probably, I'm guessing it's within 100 feet, maybe a couple hundred feet of it.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what I'd like to do. I want to show that film clip that we talked about. Now, what this is, folks, now, Jerry is going to explain to us everything about what they did and the tests that they ran and all of that. He's going to be doing that. But they also videotaped a whole lot of this. And from this videotape, he was kind enough to videotape a promo for the Kevin Smith Show. What I'm going to show you is part of that promo. Okay, now what you're going to see did not really happen. Okay, this is a little bit of editing room magic here. Okay, but I think you'll enjoy it. All right, yeah, the surroundings and the archway is all real, but well, you'll see what I mean. Here we go. Well, we see Jerry headed up into the arch, and then he just disappears. All right, Jerry, we just saw you disappear through the archway.
That was a great experience.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I appreciate you making that promo. That's unique. All right, now, let's talk about what you guys found and what tests you ran.
Certainly, and I have some new information I haven't told you about yet, too.
Okay.
Let's start with the tests. When we got there, of course, I was the first one to spot it. I was climbing up the side of a mountain. Michael was down in the wash. The other team members had spread out across these two huge ravines. We were just going slowly. We had to. It was rough going. When we got to it, we set up the equipment to take some measurements to see if there's anything anomalous about it. When I first turned on, there's a meter. Let me explain this first. There's a meter called an electromagnetic field strength meter. You might have seen this on Ghost Hunters. It's something that if there's an electromagnetic anomaly, that it will illustrate to you that this is going on. On Ghost Hunters, they call it the K2, I believe. It has lights that flash. Well, that's not very practical when you're in the Arizona sun. So what we have is a much more sophisticated version of that has three different measuring coils, and it gives us an X, Y, and Z axis of the field strength and where it's coming from and what it's doing. So we have like a three-dimensional display that we can look at that tells us, and a numeric output that we typically use that gives us the averages between that. When we got there and tested it, the first measurement that I had was for background radiation, just to find out if there was anything anomalous in the background. I had done this background radiation at the campsite at halfway to the plateau and then at the plateau. In all three instances, the field strength was showing about a 0.98, which is pretty typical for background radiation. And what this is, it's I think it's microgauss. I'd have to look at the meter to tell you if that's exactly what it's called, but it's a very weak magnetic field, and that's, of course, what the Earth has. When we got to the archway, what we did is went towards it with the meter, and the meter then started spiking above 1 as we got closer. and it was just like a pulsing, really. When I got to the archway, I set the meter on the archway, and actually in that video clip, you may be able to see it sitting there. It's a rectangular dark object that's right there to the right of me as I'm going through that video. When I got it in there, I took a look to see what the reading was, just left it alone, backed away from it so that, you know, anything that I may have on me, radios or whatever, wouldn't be it went from that 0.9 to 1 and jumped up to 2 and held it 2. And then it started pulsing 2 to 3. Yeah, you know, I see it in the video there. There's a shadow there as well, right where the meter was setting, so it's kind of hard to see. But it was pulsing at regular intervals, 2 to 3, which is pretty strong, really. I mean, you'd find something like that if you... Well, let's say if you put it up next to a television,
mm-hmm.
you probably get a 1.5. So this is some strength.
And that's right at the archway.
At regular intervals.
Yeah, and that's right at the archway, right?
That's sitting right there to the right of me as I'm going through it.
Okay.
And it didn't matter if I had that set on the right side, left side, below it, or above it. It was the same.
But if you were back away from it just a few feet, it was pulsating.
Well, it was pulsating while it was on there. But back away from it, probably 20 feet, it was running about 1. And it would drop down, you know, below 1, say about a 0.7 to 0.89, 0.9, right in there. And it was just sort of jumping back and forth. And when we got right there at the doorway and set it up and moved away from it, that's when you could see very clearly it was doing 2 to 3.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a field of some sort. We don't know what that means, but it was interesting to have noted that there was that kind of thing happening there. And then I decided that it was time to take a look at the, actually it was Kathy's decision, because she had brought the compass along to measure any magnetic anomalies. So she took a reading away from this. We got a bearing on north, and we got close into it, nothing changed. But when I got within about 10 inches of this outcropping, there was... on the right side of me, which is north, as you would go around the side of this archway, it was as though it were a horseshoe magnet, because it was pulling very strong north on the north side of the archway. On the south end of the archway, it would do just the opposite. It'd pull very strong south. So in that regard, it was kind of like a horseshoe magnet, although it wasn't really, really strong. It was just present. It was an obvious distortion in the magnetic field. But that in itself isn't astonishing, because you can have rocks that will have a strong magnetic field to them, and they're not even magnetic rocks. They're just igneous rocks from volcanoes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a normal thing. So it's not like a huge thing that we found that. The really peculiar thing about this doorway is just the fact that it's there at all. Because you'd expect that something like this would be on a windswept area where the wind would blow through there, and you would have a naturally occurring erosion process. But this was situated between a large outcropping directly in front of it, probably 10 feet in front of it, and a large rock outcropping directly behind it, about 10 feet or so. So you don't really have wind that would blow and whistle through this. You've got a natural wind barrier on either side of it. So it just seems strange to me. And the other thing is that if you get back and take a look at it, it looks like a snake of sorts, where it comes off the ground, curls around, comes up, and goes across, and the snake head is resting on like a pillar. That doesn't show up too well in the video that you showed, but from a distance, and I'll have a video at expeditiontv.com within the next week or so, and you'll be able to see it very clearly in that video.
All right. Now, did you try any of the human experiments, you know, going through the doorway and things like that?
Yeah, we did. We did it several times. We tried putting our hands on it, making tones like we did down at Aramamuru. We didn't really notice anything anomalous going on, aside from what I've already told you about. But there was something strange that happened that wasn't at the doorway. And that was noticed by Kathy. You see, when we got to our camp the day before, there was a swarm of bees that was probably, I'm guessing 20 foot across, just a huge, thick swarm of thousands of bees. I mean, it sounded so loud. It was like this weird buzz, rushing sound was moving the trees. And actually, I think Mark Felder is one who actually saw it first. So we were pretty concerned because we don't know if these are Africanized honeybees. We don't know what they are, and they're within 50 foot of camp, and they're moving through the trees. So we were pretty aware that was a very dangerous situation, potentially. When we were at the doorway, Kathy heard that same swarm of, or at least the same sound from a swarm of bees. It was very distinct sound. If you've ever heard it, it just, this buzzing noise is just amazing to hear from 1,000 bees buzzing all at once. So she was alarmed that maybe these bees had moved their way up this this valley that we'd walked up. So she laid there very still, because if you make any movements, any sudden movements, if they're Africanized honeybees, they'll attack you. So she laid there very still and waited and listened. They came closer and closer. And just as they got what she thought was too close for comfort, there was an odd whooshing sound that I can't really describe to you. It was, she described it to me, and it was just a whooshing sound that went whoosh, like that, just suddenly like something being sucked away from you, and then the sound of the bees was gone. She didn't hear them any longer. Now, we've been told that there are a lot of strange things that happen all over that plateau. It isn't just the fact that you're on the plateau and the doorway is there and that's where things occur. Actually, strange things have been recorded within a mile of this doorway in all directions.
Okay, Jerry, we have a break coming up, and I want to hear about those strange things that have been reported in the surrounding area when we come back. Folks, we'll be back with Jerry Wills right after this. Welcome back. We're talking with Jerry Wills about this very anomalous feature in southern Arizona. And the thing that's anomalous about it is that, well, he's described some of that, but there are stories about people walking through this thing and not coming out, just disappearing as they go through. Jerry, there are some stories in the surrounding area of strange things happening. You were about to tell us about those, so we're all ears.
Sure. Well, one of the things that has taken place, of course, will start at the beginning when this first became known, and that was when there was a young Indian boy who had jumped through. I think many of your listeners are familiar with that story now.
Mm-hmm.
I found out it wasn't a chicken that the Indian woman threw through there. It was a rabbit. And apparently that's one of the things that they did off and on over the course of the next decade or so after this boy disappeared, is that there would be Native Americans that would go up there, men, of course, and they would throw rabbits through to watch them disappear. So they knew something was really strange about it. The other anomalous things that have taken place, aside from that, is that there have been balls of light that have been seen coming down from the sky and going into the mountain or going down to the mountain and following the curvature of the mountains and going back into the surrounding area out of sight. And on one occasion, it happened several nights in a row, a greenish-blue ball of light came down, followed by another one. And they just hung out there for a while, and then they traveled on down the mountain slowly and back into the valley.
Now, you said that you and Kathy actually saw some of these balls of light while you were looking for this place.
Yeah, that was 2 weeks ago. It was about 2:30 in the morning. You know how bright a spotlight would look if it was being shown right at you?
Yeah.
I mean, it would just look brilliant, especially in the night sky. There was no moon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at 2:30 in the morning, I don't know why, but I woke up and I was just sort of looking around, I guess because it was a little creepy being out there by yourself in the middle of nowhere. And you hear sound and you look around. Well, I took a look, and there was this bright light about the size of a pencil eraser at arm's length. And it was just sitting there in the sky, and as I watched it, it slowly, I noticed it was actually slowly moving, and it was moving along the ridge of the mountains, the outline of the mountain, with the night sky, and continued on, just heading on across, you know, a very large open area. We were on top of a hill, and then it went on behind some mountains, and we didn't see it again after that. If it had been a helicopter or something like that, which you might expect to see down there because of Border Patrol,
yeah.
But it didn't have any lights on it. It didn't have any markings at all. It just was a really, really bright light.
Well, and there is another thing about helicopters. Unless it is a specially built helicopter with sort of a whisper mode, helicopters put out a low-frequency whopping sound. And low-frequency travels for a long distance. You can hear it. You can almost feel it. So if a helicopter is doing that, even if it's a long way from you, the sound makes its way to you eventually.
Right, and this wasn't that far away from us. It was no more than a half a mile away from us, and probably closer than that. But oddly enough, you know, where we were at, we were positioned where we could see the valley floor clearly beneath us and the surrounding area quite well. This didn't shine a light on anything. It just was really bright.
So it wasn't illuminating any of the ground or the sides of the mountains or anything like that?
Not until it got down close to the ground, and then you could see a slight glow on the ground from it. But it was as though the entire thing was luminous. It wasn't like it was a spotlight where you'd see a round area of light. It was more like this thing was just that luminous, and when it got down to within 20, 30 feet of the ground, you could see maybe 50 feet. You could see that there was some light being cast on the ground, but it was uniform. It wasn't like a spotlight.
So what do you think it was?
Oh, I have no idea. If it hadn't been desert and crazy terrain, I probably would try to chase after it. I did have a 1 million power, a candle power spotlight, but I had to get up and get to the truck to use it, and by the time I got to the truck, it was so far away that it wouldn't have made any difference.
Have you seen anything like that before, Jerry?
Well, yeah, we've seen this down in South America on several occasions, that and other things as well.
All right, now, when you were at the doorway in South America, I've seen the videos, and you've talked about it here on the show, that you, as you get close to that doorway, you can sort of feel waves of energy.
Oh, yeah, very powerfully.
Did you feel anything like that at this doorway in southern Arizona?
No, I didn't feel anything like that at all. The only thing that was kind of a strange anomaly to the way that we felt was that once we got there, we all felt extraordinarily exhausted. But that could very well be because we'd been in the sun for several hours, and, you know, you get dehydrated and such, so it may not have anything to do with the plateau.
Yeah, it just may be a function of getting to the plateau.
Yeah, well, it's a very hard place to get to. It was real surprising how difficult it is.
You know, it would seem to me that, you know, if there's all these stories about these anomalous things happening, people disappearing, rabbits being thrown through and they disappear, people seeing, looking through that portal and seeing conquistadors, it would seem that maybe there is either some secret to activating this door, or that it's certain times of the year or certain times of the day that would activate
that as well.
I'm sorry?
So we considered that as well.
What do you think?
Well, I think that there's some rhyme or reason to it. There's got to be something that has you know, a plot to it, let's say, where you can figure out when it would happen and how it would happen. Incidentally, that story about the conquistadors, it wasn't that they looked through the archway and saw that.
What was it?
On the plateau and saw it.
They saw conquistadors on the plateau?
No, they were on the plateau. They were on the plateau, and they heard the sound of horses, and they walked over the side of the plateau and looked down, and there were conquistadors riding by, and then they just shimmered like the sun and just vanished. But they weren't looking through the archway. They were just on the plateau when this happened, which leads me to believe that the entire plateau actually is the active place, not just specifically the doorway, although the doorway may have been the focus point for the anomalous instance where people or things actually just went and vanished. Now, there are reports where people were sitting there looking through, and it was overcast, but when they looked through the archway, it was a perfectly sunny day. So, you know, that's through the archway, and that's one of the stories that's happened. But for Ron Quinn, who had been living there for 2 years, he was climbing up to the side of this plateau and stopped to rest because it's a heck of a climb. He blinked, took stock of his surroundings, and suddenly noticed that things looked different. Well, what had happened is that he had stopped on the side of the plateau to rest. When he blinked and opened his eyes again, he had been transported from one side of this valley to the other side of the valley in an instant. And he couldn't figure out how that could be, so he was really worried that, you know, maybe he had hit a time stream or something and slipped through time, so he left and he went back to see if his truck was still there.
And we'll find out if his truck was still there when we come back from this break. We'll be back, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Quick reminder that if you're planning on coming to Sedona for that Ed Grimsley Skywatch Conference, you need to click that link and get your reservations in like right now. And I'm looking forward to meeting all of you there. I'll be there. I'll be speaking there. And I'm looking forward to seeing you there. All right. When we went away for break, Jerry, you were about to tell us that there was something strange when he went back to his truck.
Well, no, he was worried that if he had gone through time or something, he didn't know what had happened. One moment he's on one side of the hill, and the next moment he's on the other. So he decided to go back to his truck to see if it was still there, because, well, if it wasn't there, then he knew he was in big trouble.
Yeah, and his truck was there.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. All right, tell you what we're going to do, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to open up the telephone lines for you. The telephone number is 602-539-9580. If you can call without it costing you long distance, use that number, okay? 602-539-9580. If it's going to cost you, don't use that number. Use our toll-free number. The toll-free number is 888-223-4599. All right? 888-223-4599. And the telephone line is open. Jerry, now that you've been there, you didn't have any spectacular results or any spectacular experiences as you had at the doorway in South America, in Peru. So what is your assessment of it? Are these stories real? Is there something to this?
Well, I think there's something to it. Our objective wasn't to necessarily go and have an experience. More importantly, this is a story that's been circulating for 50 or 60 years. Actually, it's been something going on since the late 1800s. It's only within the past year that anyone's known where it is, and that's because Kathy's research, you know, brought that to where we could actually go and find the doorway and investigate it. We're really early in the investigation as far as whether there is something or not that's happening there.
Yeah.
But more the main thrust of what we were trying to do is just to say, yes, there is something there. There is an archway there. And this isn't just an urban myth that no one can validate or substantiate. We can show you pictures now. We've been there, and we've taken some measurements. So we can say, yes, for sure, there is something there. We don't know if it is or isn't active, but it is a very strange place. And that just adds to what everyone knows, so that it just brings that much more knowledge forward. I'm sure we'll be going back to investigate more, because there's more going on there than just this doorway. There's a cave up near the top of a mountain that has a pyramid inside of it, and we want to get up there and find out what that's all about.
Absolutely. All right, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Debbie from Columbus.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi. Thanks for having Jerry on again. I just love to hear about his adventures and everything. Jerry, I wanted to ask you, earlier you mentioned about the wind that was blowing through your campsite. Was that coming from the portal?
Well, that was our theory. Of course, we hadn't been to the portal at that point in time, but we knew that it was southeast of us. And this wind was coming directly southeast, right out of the same valley that we have to follow in order to go to where this portal is at. So we were theorizing, maybe so. But keep in mind, the portal may not be the key feature that would have caused something like this. According to the information we have, if you're within a mile and a half of that plateau, you're going to be within range of something strange happening, according to Ron Quinn, who lived there for a couple of years and worked out there off and on for many years afterwards. So it's about a mile and a half or so ring around that area where anomalous things occur and where our campsite was at, though it's about a 3-mile hike to get to this. As a bird flies, you're really about a mile away.
Interesting. Did you have any, was anyone in your party, like, sensitive to the anomalies that were going on, like maybe empathic or have some kind of psychic abilities that they were affected by this, that they could tune into that or be affected by it?
Well, everyone has their own keen, acute sense of that that's with us. Everyone felt that there was something strange going on there, but none of us could put our finger on what it was. It was like, you know how you might expect, for example, if you were in a haunted house, you hear a knock over the corner and there's a cold spot in the corner, and you think, oh, there must be a ghost over there. Well, this is an area that's a quarter mile by a half mile, very uneven terrain on the sides, and a big quartz outcropping. It just felt like it was everywhere. The feeling was just all around you. Couldn't get away from it, but you couldn't identify where it was specifically either.
All right, Debbie, thank you for the call, and good questions. Let's go to the phone line and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello there, Kevin. Hello there, Jerry.
Hi, Kevin.
Yes. So, Jerry, are there really any stories of people that have deliberately tried to deliberately and have successfully went through any of these doorways at all, whether this one here in Arizona or any of the ones around the world?
No. Basically, what you have in this area, they are very afraid of it. We don't know of anyone who's deliberately tried to use it. The only person we know of that went through it is that Indian boy, and he just flat disappeared, and that kind of solved the feeling that everyone else had of wanting to jump through that archway. So, as far as I know, no one has attempted to do that at all. As a matter of fact, in this particular area, they call this area Hell's Gate, specifically because, we think anyway, because the Spanish named it that way due to the anomalous nature of what goes on back in there.
What do you think might trigger the gate to open up, like to open up some sort of to open the door or a stargate or whatever it is? Do you think maybe projecting some sort of a different frequency, some electromagnetic field, some microwaves in there at different frequencies, do you think that might work?
Well, we had all those theories in mind, but you know, really, back in the 1800s and before, that wasn't a possibility yet. It was still functioning. So the only thing we've come up with so far is sound, once again.
All right, Kevin, did you have another question?
Whenever it was because somebody coming through on the other side opened it, do you think that could have been the case, or somebody might have opened it at some other time and there was still some activity going on, and when people went through there, that something did happen? But what if we tried to open it? What are some of the theories that you've heard, perhaps from your own science or scientists have perhaps theorized what might open such a doorway?
Well, the best we've come up with, aside from sound, is that it's a potential that builds within the earth and then it's released. And when that it's released, kind of like, you know, when you have lightning, you have a cloud building up a charge, and then finally, boom, lightning. Well, this happens to be right at the convergence of three ley lines. I spoke with Walter Bosley earlier today and asked him, and I have yet to do the map to say exactly how exact it is as far as where the doorway is or his map illustrates it, but from what I was able to tell from what Walter was telling me, this is right at a place where three ley lines converge. Well, if that's the case, then you have earth energies that are involved, of course, and you would have a potential that have to build, and then that potential would have to go somewhere or do something. And so I'm theorizing with the rest of our team that perhaps that's what it is, and that it becomes active when that potential hits a certain number, let's say. It goes up to 80% or 90%, and boom, it just triggers the thing into activity.
All right, Kevin, thank you for the call. Do you think, and I caught this in his question, do you think that there's someone on the other side of that gate that knows how to activate it and can activate it at will?
Well, you can speculate a lot about something like that. If that were the case, then I don't know what happened to that Indian boy or the rabbits or whatever it was thrown through there, or the fact that they looked through and saw a clear sky on the other side. It seems to be some kind of, to me anyway, it just seems to be some kind of a naturally occurring phenomena that we just aren't familiar with, creating a wormhole effect so that you can look into another age.
Okay, now, see, that brings up this whole thing about time travel. And I've had this conversation with scientists. I've had this conversation with explorers like you. I've had this conversation with paranormal investigators. And there seems to be, all across, straight across the board, there seems to be the opinion that time travel is not an impossibility. And, of course, some people say not only is it possible, but it happens. There are some who say not only is it possible and it happens, but our own government has the technology to do it. I've never seen any proof or corroboration of that. What do you say? Is time travel actually a possibility?
Oh, yeah, I believe it is. I'm quite certain that it is, but it exists outside the realm of our thinking. And until we can get our mind around the concept of time travel, then it's not going to be something we can really understand. It's kind of like trying to describe the taste of chocolate to someone who's never tasted it. You can theorize about it a lot, but until you've actually tasted it, you won't really know what chocolate tastes like.
Yeah.
Well, with time travel, it is an intellectual construct at first. And once you get the intellectual construct in place, then you try to fill in the blanks, put in the experience. I believe that time travel is very possible. And I think that it's been done for a long time. And that's probably why a lot of these portals, different places like the ones we've been looking for, that's why they've been put in very hard to reach places or have been kept very closely guarded secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Not only can you travel to a different place, but you can probably travel to a different place in a different time. In the wrong hands, that could be quite lethal.
Let me just say this for the record, our video stream, as soon as I mention that there are people who say that our own government has that technology, our video stream was interrupted and disconnected. And we used our little workaround. It's back up, and people are able to log back on. But it interrupted it right there. I want that on the record because we do have folks that absolutely live in abject violation of the Constitution of the United States of America and the rights of freedom of speech. And they just disconnected it again. And but I have news for you boys. You will not stop people from expressing what they want to express, freedom of speech. It is happening, and it's going to happen. But that's pretty interesting that they disrupted the video right then, and they still have it disrupted. All right. For those of you who are listening via radio and who are listening via your computers, the telephone number is 602-539-9580. 602-539-9580. Or 888-223-4599. It appears to me, Jerry, that... this just happens way too often, too much regularity, for this to be an accident. It's only when we mention certain things that they hit that interrupt button and disrupt the broadcast. And you know, they're really stupid. I mean, really, and I know that even though they have us disrupted, they can hear what I'm saying. It's really, really infantile and really stupid, because when they do this, it's just like taking a highlighter pen and highlighting what was just said that they don't want us to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like saying, pay attention to this because this is really true. So stupid.
Well, it seems to me that if they were really interested to keep you from getting the information out there, they would probably do better just to show up in person.
Just to do what?
They could just show up in person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unplug and, you know, they should walk over, unplug you.
Yeah. If they did that, though, see, they'd be on camera.
Well, that's the point. Then we'd be able to see who it is doing it.
Well, yeah. It would be very interesting for us to see the faces of these anti-American, anti-Constitution, anti-freedom, enemies of freedom. I don't care, gentlemen, I don't care if you get a paycheck that is from the United States government, and I'm not saying you do. But if you do, And you think, well, I'm working, you know, I work for the government. I do something good for the government. You are enemies of freedom. You are enemies of the people. You are enemies of the Constitution when you do this kind of thing. And you certainly need to know that we know. And you need to know that eventually there is coming a time where eventually people are going to take you down. You will go to jail for your crimes against freedom. Eventually. Now, I know that that means eventually, maybe sooner than later, I may take, I may disappear as if through a time portal. But I'm not backing up. I'm going to say it. I'm never going to stop saying it. That whenever anyone, for whatever reason, does this kind of thing, they are enemies of everyone on this planet who loves freedom. Sooner or later, we will take you down. Legally, but you're going down. All right. And one of the best ways to do that, too, Jerry, is... They would do these things to me in years past, and I wouldn't say anything about it. I would just say, well, I don't know, you know, it could be. I'm not going to play the ball game anymore. I'm turning the lights on, let the cockroaches run. That's the way it works. Okay, and you know, if they don't like me saying that, what they need to do is leave us alone. All right, now, Jerry, let me remind people, because we've just gotten the broadcast, the video back up, and they just cut it off again. The telephone number is 602-539-9580, 602-539-9580, or toll free at 1-888-223-4599. And I suppose we will have to rely upon you folks in Radio Land, which is the majority of our audience anyway. You need to give us a call and ask your questions or make your comment. Now, what they try to do, Jerry, you know, I watch the numbers, and when we start talking about things like that, the numbers go really sky high. And that's when they decide, if I say anything about them, then we get interrupted. So, anyway, these scums who hide behind the official capacity they may or may not have, you will pay the price eventually. Jerry, this time portal, you said you're early in the investigation. What else is there to do here?
Well, first of all, camping out on the plateau, spending some time there, spend a day, spend a night. If it's that weird and that active, trying to get an idea, of course, on when the best time to do that, but pretty soon it's not going to be very practical because it's going to be over 110 degrees out there. But spending some time on the plateau, putting our base of operations on it, and let's see what happens if you spend the night out there. There have been rumors and reports of lights coming out of the sky and going right down to it, seeing strange things when you're on it. So I think staying on the plateau and finding out what happens if you stay there.
Are you not afraid to do that?
No. Not at all. And it seems like a natural thing to be a little frightened of it, but Kathy and I have been in some really strange places that were kind of frightening. And this is nowhere near what those were.
Okay, we're only like a minute and a half away from a break. And in that minute and a half, what are some of the things that you think you might see there?
Well, what we would hope to see is, and not just see, but also measure, but any activity that's taking place, being keenly aware of the surroundings and seeing if there's anything that changes. Making record of that, taking pictures, taking videos, and bringing it back for everyone to see for themselves. If there are UFOs coming down over it, or balls of light, whatever they may be, then okay, we'll take measurements on that too. Take film of it, video of it rather, and photographs of it. And if they're ETs, we'll invite them in for freeze-dried food.
You said you had seen these in South America, and like I said, we have this break coming up. But when we come back from this break, I'd like for you to sort of describe for us some of what you have seen, some of these experiences where you've seen these balls of light in South America, and let's compare them with what gets seen around here and what you saw there on the plateau in southern Arizona, and we'll get into that when we come back from this break. For those of you who are trying to join us via video, good luck. There are anti-American, anti-freedom, anti-constitutional people interrupting it. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and Avi, you had a question. I had to cut you off right at the break.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, I was asking whether or not, I was thinking about what Jerry said about the perimeter, the whole perimeter around the arch has these strange things that happen, the teleporting and all that. And it reminded me about, remote popping in my head about medicine wheels and how there's all sorts of stone circular stones, patterns like Stonehenge around the world. These are obviously made, but I don't know. I just thought maybe something underneath. I mean, there's obviously no way to really know what's underneath it, but...
Well, first off, I wasn't able to hear you earlier because the phone was breaking up. Is this Avi Fine?
Oh, yeah, that's me.
Yeah, okay. Well, Kathy says to tell you hello.
Oh, hi. Yeah.
And it's nice to talk to you. There could be something, you know. It's really hard to say. One of the things that we theorized when we were there about these geodes, the geodes are all kind of like the same size, within the same size range. And we're thinking that maybe these geodes have formed as a result of the energy that's running through this little plateau, that it's caused these geodes to occur, because there's really thousands and thousands of them within this plateau. You can't walk a foot without stumbling onto a large outcropping of quartz. So, you know, maybe there's something like this under there that has something to do with it. As far as something being man-made underneath of it, you know, it's a possibility that that's, you know, maybe that could
be. Would be well hidden.
We don't know. It would be well hidden. The thing that kind of boggles your mind when you think about this is that it is in such a remote place. To think that anyone at any time would have gone back there and built anything is just kind of hard to accept, because there is no evidence of being able to get back there unless you were in a helicopter.
I think
if you were built by the ancients, then, then maybe there's something that we should be looking at as well. And, of course, that large cave that we know is there with a pyramid in it, well, maybe there's something that is associated between the plateau and that cave. So there are a lot of unanswered questions about this.
Avi, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Sorry about all of the troubles that we've had tonight. They're not technical troubles here. I assure you, here it's working. It's all a result of an attack. Jerry, you know, I think it's if you're going down, I'm pretty sure it's when you go down 101, there is that Tovray Castle.
Yes.
I passed that today, and there's a pyramid out there. They've built a pyramid out there on the Tovray Castle grounds.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, this is not an ancient structure. This is something new. And, you know, I've got to look into that. I got to know, why are we building a pyramid over there? That's a city park now.
Mm, yes, it is.
And back when I used to do security, I was assigned, actually I got, I that came up, I was a senior supervisor, of course, and but I saw that come up on the list of something that they had to send someone to, and I volunteered to go because I wanted to get inside the place and see it, and I got to do that, and it's a pretty interesting, fairly amazing place. But this pyramid is in an area they had used for parking. And, you know, it's not gigantic, but it's there. And I'd kind of like to know why. So I'm going to check into that. Jerry, I just can't get over the immensity of the attack that we have had tonight. And it's...
You just went off again, Kevin.
Yeah, I know. I'm watching it. I'm watching I'm not watching a video monitor. I'm watching the controls, and I'm watching it pop on and off. And it's at this moment trying to reconnect to the video. But I cannot get over the immensity of this attack. It's been intense. They've disrupted the radio stream. They've disrupted the video stream. They've disrupted the telephone system. You know, it says to me that what you're dealing with at that location must be highly sensitive for some reason.
Well, I would think that they wouldn't want us back there. You know, one of the things that just happened recently is that the National Park Service just took over that entire area, and they were going to chain it off so that no one could go back there, but the ranchers put up quite a stink about that, and so they've left the gates unchained so that they could get access, because that's where a lot of cattle are grazing around through some of those mountains. And as National Park Service, you know, they could just close that thing right off. We know of a few places that are pretty sensitive that they've closed off like that around the United States that you just are completely not allowed to go into.
What is it that you suspect they are hiding in those places?
Well, what we've come to understand is that they're hiding ancient technologies or ancient sites. There's one place up in, I've forgotten now, it's Idaho or Washington. It's up in that region of the United States. There's a mountain, and you're not allowed to go past a certain point towards that mountain. And the reason we found out is because there's a cave there, and they actually have a big iron door over the cave entrance now. This cave is an entrance into some city, I suppose, from the stories we've heard, that's down inside the earth. So you're not allowed to go in there. And the same thing is true when we went to investigate the, what is that called? There's a cave in New Mexico, Wingmakers Cave. And it now has a big bar and, you know, iron thing across it, so you can't get into that cave.
Now, this one that you were saying was the entrance into a city. Is it like an ancient city, or is it a city that's inhabited now?
Well, I don't know if it's inhabited or not, and I don't know that anyone in our circles would know if it is or not. I'm sure there's speculation out there as to whether it is. But the story goes that an Indian Native American gal took off. She was pregnant, and she was shamed because she was pregnant. She took off, went in this cave to go die, walked for a long time, laid down to die, and she was greeted by some guy who took her on down into the cave and ended up inside of an underground city with refrigerator and electric lights and the whole bit. And she stayed down there for 6 months, had the baby, and then she knew she needed to get back because the guy that got her pregnant was her boyfriend, and she was, you know, wanting to be with him. So the fellow escorted her back out, and she told this story.
What year was that?
Well, I don't know. I don't remember dates exactly about this. I just remember the story.
Yeah.
It was something that happened within the past 50 years.
Well, certainly we live in strange times, and it's a strange planet. Jerry, we are just about to the end of the show here. And
ready?
I want to thank you for being with me. Stay with me on the line. We'll try to stay connected, and I want to talk with you for a moment. Well, folks, there you have it. Those of you who have been trying to watch this on our TV channel, I apologize for the interruptions caused by people who hate freedom of speech. But that's the world we live in. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.